more, you know, more, for lack of a better term in my vocabulary, art house games. Stuff with more meaning to it, stuff with something that could, you know, you could really say, yeah, we should have a body of criticism because we aren't ready to deal with this kind of game from a critical level. You know, he really wants to push the boundaries on that, as opposed to what traditionally we've seen, which is, you know, bigger, better graphics and, you know, like a general, like, you know, action blockbuster approach to gaming.
Right.
So Braid is a platformer that deals very closely with the nature of time. And going through the game, each so there's like, was it five or six worlds, and in each one, you can rewind time. You can do something interesting with time. So on one level, when you move forward, time moves forward. When you move back, it moves backwards. On another level, you can just simply rewind time. So any mistakes you make, you can undo. And he has done a lot of interesting gameplay with that. Like there's some things that'll be outside of that rewind fast forward. So you can, you know, there's a spiky pit with a key in the bottom, but that key is outside of it. It's glowing green. So you can jump down in the pit and you'll grab the key and then die. And then you rewind time and the key stays with you when you rewind out of the pit and then you go home.
But that building the key is independent of the time stream.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
but the narrative, without spoiling it, just talk about World 1.
Okay.
Yeah.
The narrative is about regret and taking things back.
Or maybe it's about, it's clearly, whatever it's about, there's...
That is what's introduced in the
World 2.
Yes. Yeah, that's not.
I don't think there's really a sharp narrative. The book, it just cuts up these sort of themes and emotions and moods for you.
Yeah.
The words themselves, they don't fit together in any.
It's not. It's hard to argue that it's actually the coherent story of one single individual. I mean, it feels more like a collage.
No, it's just like a collage of images or whatever you want to call it.
But in each case, even if it is a collage, it's about somebody wanting to take something.
Well, not all. I think that if it didn't, the ending of which World 1, which is in fact the last world.
Yeah.
If what happened in that chapter didn't happen, the game would be. I think the bulk of its sort of meaningful interpretation comes very much from that last part.
But I have a proposal for our conversation. Rather than dance around the end of Braid for the next 45 minutes. the thing that I find really interesting is that Braid and a number of other games right now are getting at, and it's a very, you know, hot topic with design and in blogs, is the idea of narrative in games and where and how it relates. Personally, I had sort of a transition over the last 4 or 5 months that kind of culminated in a lot of what I'm doing with the game I'm making, which is I was very firmly in the camp of, you know, like my favorite games are role-playing games, both pen and paper and computer, Western-style role-playing games, so ones with lots of choice to them, or hopefully. And what you see in those is an authored story where you have a certain amount of control over where it goes, or an illusion of control at the least. And then eventually that leads you down, but still it's a matter of, you know, there are certain touch points within the story that you're pretty much going to hit no matter what. And there will be a number of meaningless choices and a smaller number of meaningful choices where you can affect the flow of the game in a serious way. As opposed to, and then I really wanted to make that kind of game. And in the last several months though, before I started development on what I'm doing, was I kind of transitioned to the thought of more procedural narrative. And the idea of, I started really reading and listening to the idea of narrative as something that we can supply as players of games to things that are being played. So the idea that when you play The Sims, you know, your characters aren't telling a story. There's no authored story there. There's no author saying, your character does this, this, and this. These are more probabilistic things that are going on. But there's a story there, and it's the story that you as the player are putting onto it.
This discussion reminds me of something that in game studies has been a controversy for a while. The idea of like ludology versus narratology, the study of games as games and games of rules, and there's nothing to do with stories, and what are you saying? Is the Department of Literature wanted to take over whatever they can? versus literature people saying, yeah, actually, or some studies, they have elements that are very much like a narrative that we can underline, and they're probably both right at the same time and wrong.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is the balance between you have the rules, the game has rules, and the game has story, and there are different types of games
yeah.
that will have more or less story. RPGs, I'm sure, like without the story, there's no game. Tetris, without the
rules.
You know, it's like what story does Tetris
yeah.
have?
Yeah.
Well, is it a useful exercise to whenever somebody says that to swap the word games with books?
Because books don't have rules for dynamics.
Yeah.
No. But when you start asserting that all books need stories, you start seeing how much of a fallacy the same statement of all games need stories. Or
well,
all
then
games
there's books. It works with theater. It's like all plays
right.
need stories. It's like, well, watch some Beckett and then you have to make it.
Well, I guess it depends on which kind, because there are books that are like, they describe stuff or
right. thank you,
stuff. And, but yeah. they don't need a story
yeah.
to do that.
Right. And so and either just Peckers.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm trying to bring this back a bit to what Scott was saying, but there are different stories in a game, and there are different elements that they can relate to. Now, there are the, I make the parallels between, you know, the mechanics, dynamics, aesthetics, if you're familiar with the NBA framework. There's a part of the story that's pre-written, it's pre-set, that kind of relates to the mechanics of the game. It's
that's
all
the backstory.
It's the backstory, it's not the backstory, it's what is already there. This is what the makers of the game are expecting you to do.
Okay.
The dynamics of the story, the dynamics of the game relate to the emergent storytelling. It has to do with the sims. You know, like what happens when you set up the system of the game going. What happens when, you know, the emergent storytelling, like the holy grail, yeah, we're going to get this somehow. We're going to make a system that will produce really interesting stories, but we're still getting there. And then there is the aesthetic, the experience of the game that relates a bit to the retelling. But one thing is what happens when the system is set in place, and the other is what you tell all the people that you've done in the game. Or like, you know, films like The Sims, when you can make a movie and put it online. It's like that. There are different levels in which you can have stories, and once there's part of the storytelling, and there's who tells the story is different each time. It can be the game makers, it can be the system itself, it can be the player itself. It's like, how do you bridge those? How do you bring them together?
Yeah, the interesting thing about those immersion stories is the definition of story is broad enough, which basically comes down to a series of actions and reactions,
mm-hmm.
like related events, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It pretty much applies to any game, including Tetris. It's like, oh, and then I just barely made this block, and it was awesome, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's always there. The thing with those stories is those are my favorite kind, and I think those are our forte. But the hard part is making them read. That's a major part of the major challenge. What I'm describing is, like, if you're playing, like, Civilization or something, the whole story is dynamic and immersion. And it actually works pretty well because... I mean, if you pay attention to the game and understand what's going on, you can sort of build up a mental map of the significance of events. The thing is that the game doesn't know how to point out to you what's significant and what's not. Like, there could be one battle that's, like, going to turn the tide of this war, which, like, in real life, people talk about it and, like, everybody knows that it matters because of the context that it's existing in. Because that event is more important than this other battle, which is just meaningless and could go either way, it doesn't really matter. But the game can't pick that kind of thing out. Like, if Sim 4 could somehow, and I'm not suggesting that there's any computational way that I can think of to do this, but, like, pick out significant historical events, like, in your society's history. Like, this great leader did this, which caused this, this great leader built this wall, which, like, 20 years later, prevented this season being taken, which changed the course of this war, right? So that great leader is, like, a great person in history. Whereas in the game, it doesn't pick out any of those things for you. Have you guys ever heard of these battle reports that they have for RTS games?
Yeah, sure.
There are reports
after
you can
action
see.
Reports.
Yeah, after action reports. There are these things like for StarCraft. You might think that it's hard to watch like a game of StarCraft because all these units running around blasting each other. It's hard to watch. I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah.
And they know how. That's why they enjoy it. But the thing is, if you just watch these guys blasting, it just looks like guys exploding. But if you like go to one of these battle reports, and these guys will take the record of the game and like write down everything that happened and explain the significance of every event, and why everything happened and how it relates to everything else, then this completely dynamic StarCraft game, which lasts 10 minutes maybe, is like this sort of faint and like off-faint and like, the author explains to you, like, this guy did this to make this guy think that he had forces here. It's really interesting, these reports and the stories that are in them, if the players are good. The problem is not that the story isn't happening in the game, it's that the game doesn't has no way of making it readable for normal people. Like, there's unless somebody goes and like analyzes it for you and writes out the story, and, like write the history and connects these events together for you, the events are all there and the significance is there internally, but the story isn't there because those connections and the meaning isn't made for you. So if we could, the problem is not the doing the events themselves. I think that's actually not too hard in a good game, like a well done dynamic simulation. The thing that we're missing is something to help you draw meaning from them.
So it's like, the problem is there's plenty of stories, there's just no storytellers.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, computers are shitty storytellers. Like, they can't tell what matters.
Yeah. And but it's interesting, like, what you're describing here is it not enough, though, for that stuff to just be handled by, like, fan communities and communities of people online? It's kind of
it
like,
works.
So, because it does work. I mean, people do make videos of their sims and say, this happened to me, this was amazing.
Yeah.
And that's when it sort of becomes a story and becomes meaningful in that way. And
when you're
possible, just running a sim, tell me about a calculation on the back end of this thing to determine when the point of
challenge.
That is the greatest degree.
You could do some really simple things.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering, like, do you even need to, though? It's like, is the community supplying that, or do we have to? Do we have
not to 90% of players. They just don't
even see it. In the absence of that community, it's possible to replicate
this,
like, using
multiple.
The other thing is, like, when I play a game of Civ, I want to know what the story was from my game of Civ. Like,
so
unless somebody writes
a
report
for it. Well, I think what's confusing, a couple of different things
are text, though. They're not the experience of playing the game.
Yeah.
They're the experience of reading a text about a game.
But it's the information. Like, if you can communicate that information that's in the text while you're playing the game.
Or in, like, the instant replay effect, right? Yeah, but you need a computer that was powerful enough to both play the game and be recording everything you do at the same time in order to cut it down all
the time. But you want the game to interpret itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even characters in the game to interpret it.
Well, that's
so wait, hang on a second.
Hang on.
We're getting hung up on what happens after the game has been played. I mean, you're reading the game afterwards. Now, are you talking about narrative as the game is being developed or during the game? And which piece of narrative were you really interested in looking at? I mean, because there's lots of different ways you can go with the discussion.
It's interesting because there's a difference, what I was just thinking, between what we're talking about is you've got the narrative done by the player that they will lay upon the game. But then you've also got the cues that the game can give to the player and prompt them in that creation of the narrative. And what I'm trying to do with my game is, has anybody ever heard of Paradox Games or Crusader Kings? Europa Universalis?
Sure. Europa Universalis.
Okay, so the guys who did that game, they're a bunch of guys up in Norway or Sweden who are batshit crazy. And
they are very dark.
They make some serious, like take over the world risk style games. But the most fantastic thing that I saw in a long time and really inspired me was in Crusader Kings, where it's pretty much the Holy Land in Europe, and you are, you know, some king or, you know, what duke, whatever you want to be. And you go through this, and you have your dynasty, you have your family, and you need to put them into spots. They have, you know, various advisor capacities in your kingdom, and they also, you know, one of them is going to be the duke or the king or whatever, or the queen, and they all have traits. They all have these little traits that get added and taken away throughout the course of the game. So if your genetics are really messed up, and you've married badly, you will have somebody with the hair lift, and the inbred, and this and that. But the best one, my absolute favorite, is schizophrenia. Is that you'll get a schizophrenia tag, and it's just like there's these little things, and you just mouse over, and it gives you a little bit of info on, you know, it just kind of says schizophrenic, and then has the in-game effects. So they don't go much into this. But the best thing about schizophrenia is that if you have a character that gets that, they will then, just like popping candy, they will start adding on traits. Like once every couple of years. So they suddenly become proud, arrogant, foolish, you know, like a laundry list of stuff.
It's like a personality random.
Yeah, it looks like they think they're batshit crazy. And the most fantastic thing about it was, to me, like then I loved following those characters.
Yeah.
And I would then, I had one guy who had, because of like the various pluses and minuses all added up. This was in Rome, Europa Universalis Rome, which is their newest one that's out. And I had to put someone as the Adele for Rome. And if I remember my offices right, this was the guy who dealt with all construction and how well your construction technology advanced. This guy was brilliant. He was crazy as the day is long, but he was brilliant. And like he just, like, my construction stuff, I keep getting, like, and it was completely random. Like, I shouldn't have had it go this well by the bell curve, but I kept getting all these random events going off because this guy was the Adele on how, like, we built a new Colosseum for free, all our sanitation is awesome. And I'm like, dude, batshit crazy dude, you're awesome. That's the kind of story that I think is really intriguing about, because I would just be like, wait a minute, I go back and check like 10 years later, and he's still kicking. Like, this guy should have died 20 years ago. Like, he's back, and that's a laundry list.
That's everything character.
Well, you yes, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Well, it's like you couldn't have written that.
Yeah. No.
But you could have.
Well, here's the thing.
You could do it at StarCraft. You would have just been a guy with, like, numbers that were changed, right? Well, fundamentally, it's just numbers. So it's like, this guy got smarter or whatever. His economic skill went up. So say that the game was simpler and lacked that layer of fictionalization, and it was just like his like economic skill just went crazy high just because of some random number generator.
Yep. Yeah.
And like, you got all those bonuses. So if someone wrote a report about that, they might have made up some little thing where, like, this guy was like a crazy dude that sits around 22 hours a day working on his blueprints or something.
Well, but the story happened in your head.
Yeah.
But they cued it
in a very explicit way. Prompted in a very explicit way because of those traits.
Yeah.
So the traits, I mean, I've seen too many characters get schizophrenia and pile up stuff to know that that's anything but designed by Paradox. Mm-hmm. Like, they totally have it work that way. Which, you know, like, Paradox has made something there that you can really sink your teeth into in terms of story.
So would you say that game has, like, it has, like, optimal cues, right?
They've raised their mountains and lowered their valleys of making sure that, you know, like, the stuff that they spawn off is, and I mean, this is much more of an isolated example. So, I mean, like, you know, like, a lot of the stuff in the game isn't this good.
Yeah, that happens. That happens once every.
I mean, the reason that I'm trying to run with this is that you don't see that a lot. I was like, God, you could do so much with this, and I don't see it being done. So that's one of the reasons I'm doing this. But I think that, you know, there's a lot there to the idea of using, of, for lack of better terms right now, called procedural storytelling, which is that you're creating your game in such a way, and it's a combination of algorithmic procedures and content procedures.
Right. Here's the thing, though. Like, the fundamental game is almost the same as, like, just a raw numbers game.
Yes.
All they've done is apply labels.
Yes.
Right.
And that's, like, a really cool labeled version of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you, like, you move that on to, like, you take, like, a shooter game where there are a lot of games where, like, enemies are injured and they run away, but if they actually yell, oh, I'm fucked up, you gotta help me or something, then they run away. It's more meaningful, right? Because now he's afraid. Versus he's running away because he's out of them.
Or like convincing you he's afraid.
Yeah, or like, well, it's gonna go another layer deeper. But that's what I'm talking about, is like, you gotta, if there's other characters in the game, they should cue you as to why they're doing the things they're doing, beyond just, or like, even if it's not the real reason, algorithmically, why they're doing what they're doing, just make up something.
Well, that's, I mean, like Unreal Tournament, like, you know, like, several years ago started, you know, .com, maybe even the first one, I don't know, but they started saying, well, not even the taunts, just the, you know, tiltacular. Like, sure, you've hit 90 kills before in a game, but now you're tiltacular. You know, they're putting that label on you, and in some way influencing the story that's coming into your head of this game.
Well, that's how it feels to me, like, when a first-person shooter says, you know, the biggest coward at the end of a... at the end of a multiplayer
right? Yeah.
It's giving you that label, right? And to me, that makes a big difference.
See, I guess to me, that's two separate things almost, because, like, the stuff that they say at the end, like, you know, Energy Hoarder for Rock Band, You know, like, that's just like, that's the after action report. That's almost the same as being on the forums and talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, whereas in the game, when you get, you know,
like, you hit three or four kills in a row and it'll say something like, you know, unstoppable. Or,
yeah. You know, and you feel, wow, I am unstoppable. And maybe you're a
better
experience.
Like,
it's dynamic,
Well, I mean, this is kind of a reward mechanism.
But it happens
more
instantly.
Because it's not like...
But it's happening. It's happening
it
as you play.
Why it happens?
Right, but it's happening as you play. It's not happening at the end as a summation of your play. It's happening during the game.
My examples at the end are just like to show what we can do now.
Right.
And ideally, we can thread that into the game itself.
Well, then there are games to do things like that.
Brave doesn't do any of this.
But like, there are some older games. Like, there's a sim called Outpost.
What does it do?
Okay, you know the ring, the time round.
Wait, are we okay? Can we talk
about it?
Yeah,
I'm talking about
the ring.
Sorry, I'm going to do World 5 before of those ones. Sorry, I didn't play this one.
Play them.
Okay, cool. But like, before you go into the world, and he does it before instead of after, there's like a little story about, oh, the ring, like, it was great, and then it like slowed me down or something like that, and it's pressing me, so I try to get rid of it. And then, it's not really a sharp story.
Right.
Like, real stories, like most stories usually are. It does sort of just that sort of mood. But it imbues it with more meaning than it would have just as a raw numbers mechanic.
It's funny because, like, in the case of the ring, when I first read it, I didn't make the association of, like, oh, this is the ring that you were talking about. It was, like, going back to the level
it's
of, really
But it's not a great example, but there is something there.
The thing that I think is special about Brave is that it takes a narrative and makes it part of the game mechanic. So if it's a game about regret, the fact of the matter is the entire mechanic of the game is reversing time to take things back that you did wrong.
Would you call that a theme or a narrative? Regret
the
theme.
I think that's a theme or a
theme.
That's a theme.
Like regret is not a sequence of events.
No. There isn't really a narrative to regret.
So has everybody played Passage?
Yes.
Yeah. Like Passage might be a bit more about story.
5 minutes, you can do it.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. It can slow it up.
You know what, if you guys want, I'll grab my laptop and then download it. We can look at it while we're doing this.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, great, but we can look at it when we're done.
Okay, this is like, the first playthrough is like, what am I doing?
It's
a game, but then you realize, no, this is not the game, there's something else.
I think it's a game when you start playing it, but by the time you're done, you're like, oh, this is a game.
Yeah. Why is it not? Because you don't make choices?
Well, you don't make choices. There's only
sure you do.
You do make choices.
There's only forward. You can't go forward.
You can go down.
You can go down.
And you can get chests or not get chests.
You can spend all your time trying to get chests. But chests don't add us anything.
Well, but you're told.
Yeah.
But
it's like you want to increase your score, you want to explore more and go further.
Do scores matter?
Yeah. The thing with that game is that you realize after you go back and replay it is that there are more than one possible story that you can make out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by figuring out what the system is, you figure out, oh, this is what the game is about. And the game is not like a narrative, but it's like, oh, this is not like...
Well, narrative is kind of a word I'm not a really good fan of, just because I think it puts you in kind of a linear frame of mind,
right,
like a sequence of events. And really what I look for in games is like, I mean, sometimes I prefer sort of compelling, it's more like a compelling situation that has layers of meaning or interesting themes or metaphors, that it's not necessarily like what I call a story.
You mean the embedded story or the story that can emerge from it?
The both, I mean, it's kind of like the embedded story, I mean, a game, I mean, I think one kind of affects the other. I mean, the game gives you a scenario, right? It's kind of like...
Backstory.
Well, I mean...
No, the backstory is a place, and then you take it from there. Like,
well,
so that was the starting point.
Starting point is not the backstory, though. The backstory is everything that got you to that.
Yeah, I mean, the backstory is, like, implied about what happened earlier. I mean, more just kind of like, okay, you're a soldier in the village and you don't know if you're evil, right? That's a situation.
Yeah.
If I can try and, I would like to steer a little bit, because we're starting to get more into, like, is it this or is it that? I'd rather talk more about, instead of worrying about what is what, like, let's talk about cool stuff that we think could happen or cool stuff that we have seen happen.
I was actually gonna ask, like, you had mentioned, like, these are the kinds of RPGs I was interested in, but now I'm interested in this. And so far, like, we mentioned, what, Braid, Passage in Europa Universalis, and I'm just wondering what other specific games.
I mean, you guys are talking about strategy games.
Well, there's a game called...
They're the ones that are the most dynamic, so I think they get the most real story.
Role-playing games have huge sprawling stories.
I don't know, but what
they're
I was saying at,
wait, originally,
when like, I said,
pre-written.
Yeah, if they're pre-written.
Yeah. What I was getting at was my point of view on the kind of story, because the reason I called my company MacGuffin Games is the term MacGuffin is a Hitchcock term, which means the thing that gets the plot going.
It's the Melty's fault.
Yeah, it's the money that the girl steals at the beginning of Psycho. And I like MacGuffin because it kind of spins on, it kind of shows me the different ways you can look at games in terms of narrative. I won't get into all that, sorry, I wasted time. But the interesting thing to me was, you know, like, looking at it from that point of view of, I want to make an RPG, you know, to moving away from that to, you know what, I'm going to try this other thing, which some people are saying, this is what computers are really going to be good at. This is the thing that's special to our form of art, to making computer games, is being able to create interactive stories, non-authored stories, not at least authored in the sense that books are or movies are.
Yeah. One of the chats I asked about that entire assertion is that you could make the same assertion about film. It's like, well, clearly what film can do better than anything else is motion. So clearly stories with all the best motion are going to be the best stories. Well, and things like Citizen Kane, it's like, oh, well, it's not really about moving the camera very fast. It's about what's depicted in that.
I think you know, games, they may not be authored stories in an emergent sense, that's because they're emergent, but they're still authored systems.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the author of the system, and whatever values are in that system are ones that you've either consciously or subconsciously authored into the system. So I don't think you get away from authorship. I mean, to me...
No, there's still authorship.
There's authorship, but you're authoring the rule system.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other person is performing that rule system within the limits of what you've authored.
Yeah. That's
how it's pitched.
Oh.
Sure, but I just think that
Well, the problem with games as opposed to anything else that's written is that, as it's been talked about, games are just, they're inherently non-linear, and therefore there's a limit to how much you can author them. Well, no, some games are linear, but there's still choices that characters do within that changes what happens.
Right.
And so, unlike a book, or unlike a story, you can't really author a game from start to finish. There has to be an emergent story. There has to be a part of it that comes out.
Games are basically like lockstep. You can't get off the path.
You can't have something like StarCraft. Is it's like, you know, it's very gated.
Yeah.
But how you get to the next
right.
One. You're also like a single player game?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're
offering possibilities, but you can't offer the complete story because you can't write it from start to finish and ensure that the player is going to go from A to B to C.
But if you make it impossible for the player to do something, there's no way they're going to do it.
That's true, yes.
Yeah.
But then what happens to gameplay? Then you're talking about a game that can be incredibly boring to play.
No, I'm just saying, but if you make a game that's about, like, okay, I have a chainsaw, a candle, and, you know, a stuffed animal, right? The game is going to be effectively stuffed.
Sounds like a game design challenge.
Yeah. Well, all right, let me give you an example.
But the game would have to be about that. The game couldn't be like, I'm going to perform surgery now. It's like, no, you're not.
there's a game called, it was put out of, when Bungie, before Bungie became Microsoft, called Oni.
Oni, yeah.
Now, if you've played the game, you know that there's something that happens to that character about two-thirds of the way through it that changes everything about the game. There's something that happens to there's something that was built into the character that you don't, that doesn't...
I think you can spoil it for us.
Go for it.
Okay.
I have a player, not a player. He's 7 years old or something.
Yeah, so, spoil away.
It's a fun game. I like it. But all right. So, anyway, so the character starts out, it's done in the anime style. It's very, very cool, very well written, well designed. She's a member of an elite military police force. And
They all are.
But there is something about this particular person that she was engineered. How would you describe it? She's engineered to be... Oh, you haven't played it?
No.
Okay.
She finds out she's not who she thinks she is. She finds out she's a clone. She finds
she's
out
not that
she
it's not that she's a clone. It's not
all the standards.
But it's a plot. It's something where the character is playing one side of the law.
And then you switch to the other side?
Right.
Okay.
But
okay.
It's something that emerges very, very gradually, and you get pieces of it throughout the levels. Now, I know this hasn't been done in games before, but it was done very, very effectively, because as the character goes from level to level, and as you complete the missions, and again, these are missions that there's really one, maybe two ways to get through each level to complete them. But pieces of the story emerge very effectively as the character goes through each level, until the plot twist happens and the character is revealed to be not...
So they foreshadow it.
Yes. Yeah. And then, but then after the story develops, then, I mean, it's not complex storytelling, but it's done very, very effectively.
Well,
and the way it emerges is done very effectively in the context, in the limitations of the game.
In fancy writer school where I went, that was narrative.
Yeah.
Narrative is how the story is revealed.
Yeah, that's not emergent storytelling.
Right.
That's the best story.
So,
Another thing, actually, I wanted to mention with regards to like the players. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Players like interpreting and extracting stories from dynamic, not authored situations is that familiarity is really important. So. Example I want to give, it's kind of strange, but a little while ago I made this kind of experimental game, which was like a strategy game about picking up chicks in bars. So, and I'd like show it to different people, and like I knew one guy who was like really super social, and he was like out at the bar all the time. So I got him to play, and he's like, he actually kind of liked it. I mean, the game didn't really ever work, because it was hard to read everything. He was like, yeah, I talked to this girl, and then I wanted to like, you know, pull her home and all this stuff like that. And he sort of enjoyed it, and then I showed it to other people who like were more introverted and didn't actually do that kind of thing in real life, and they just like didn't get it or enjoy it at all because they couldn't understand what was happening. So you take that back to games like Civilization, where we all sort of have the stereotypical view of human history, and that's all that you really need. And so when something happens, it's not just the thing that happened in the game, it's also everything that it looks like happened in real life. So when you play, you guys know DEF CON?
Yeah.
So, Missa comes in, it says 14 million dead, right? But it's, all that happens in the game is this number goes down by 14.
Right.
But of course, you imagine in real life that this blast wave is shredding all these people's bones out of their bodies, you know? Because it's sort of imbued with meaning that comes from outside of itself, which makes it a lot stronger. So I think that...
Well,
it's
also heavily referencing war games.
Yeah,
and, but the sound design of that game is so amazing because as the body count goes up, you hear sobbing in the back.
I think you hear sobbing all the time, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know.
But I think, what, does anybody not play DEF CON? DEF CON? Okay, so DEF CON is by Introversion, who did Darwinia and the Hacker game. But they're all available. It's a very pixel sort of game. It's very abstracted, so you've got like a wireframe map of the world, and your units are little wireframe units, and there's, you know, like a carrier representing a carrier group, and you know, like those, you know, three little jets representing a jet group, and it's a countdown to nuclear war, and you win by losing the least people and killing the most people.
Yeah.
And the audio of the whole thing is a very like, you're in the middle of NORAD, you know, an echo chamber sort of, you know, like, you know, you can hear hushed in the background, people talking, and as things start, you know, start happening with the nukes, you know, it looks just like Missile Command, like there's a little dot comes in and it goes,
yeah.
And there's a little splash of color, and it says
10 million dead.
Million dead, 28 million dead,
yeah.
And it's disturbing. I played it once. Because I was like, this is creepy as hell.
Right.
And
nothing happens, right? But it sort of draws my...
Yeah, it's a multiplayer game.
I never played a multiplayer myself.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But imagine, like, there was someone who had actually experienced, like, nuclear bomb blast. How much that would mean to them.
Well, you can make an example with, like, the Twin Towers. I imagine whenever you heard about this art installation that was in Europe or something like that, where they had, like, space invaders and they had this guy had the Twin Towers behind it. And he got this apology, like, how dare you put the Twin Towers mixing the Twin Towers with space invaders. Because, you know, the image of the Twin Towers has got this tower and you fill in the gas and, you know, poor guys try to explain to people, no, I'm not trying to trivialize the Twin Towers, I'm doing a criticism of, you know, the policies of the United States, you know, how they fall into attacking people easily, and that there is a political comment, that there is a cultural comment. But yeah, like the whole what is it that you're putting? I guess, you know, print tower. You put the print towers in any game, are you changing whatever it means?
Yeah. There was also that game that was like done with the Unreal Engine where you were trapped inside one of the towers and you had to jump out.
World Trade Center Escape.
It's called World Trade Center Escape, where the only escape is actually to jump.
Yeah. Well, it would put you on a random floor.
Yeah.
And so if you were above the impact, you had to jump.
Well, that game didn't really need much else to be compelling.
Right.
I mean, you know, so that was, I mean, I don't know where that fits in what we're talking about, but it seemed like it really...
But actually...
Kind of
yeah. Yeah.
No, but actually, I talked to, we had Daniel Adoni in, who made Super Columbine Massacre RPG. And the narrative of that is, he did the research and you learn more about what happened that day from the game than from anything else I've read about the
that game was just like high school. I mean, it it's like you're walking down the hallway and it's like really? A jump here. What are you gonna do?
Well, and not only does he spoof the kind of Japanese RPG genre, but by putting it in Columbine, he makes that genre disturbing, you know?
It's beginning with a series with game conventions and it's kind of using them as a sort of satirical framework for something. But it's interesting, I mean, what that game basically has all the same limitations of like a typical Japanese RPG in terms of story.
Well, the other thing is you can't die because everybody else has like 4 hit points and you have hundreds and you have guns and they don't.
I'm just curious as to what are some other compelling examples besides your opening into those olives that sort of stick into that
thing? Medieval Total War is the same thing.
Medieval Total War?
Like you get traits.
Global Fortress.
Yes. I was going to mention it because it's completely inscrutable when you're looking at it. The whole thing is asked, have you guys heard of this game, Global Fortress?
Yeah, I got it on here.
I can't play it. I've tried like 3 times. I'm like, all right, now
you got to 5 or 6 is really the key.
I'm like, all right, this time I'm going to actually figure out what the hell's going on. And then I try for like 3 hours and I give up.
Yeah.
But I think by making it ASCII, they
abstracted it.
Well, but they also...
They put the load on you, right?
And they've got enough of those events and tags in there that it randomizes and becomes interesting. And so they spent their time, their development time, doing the kind of back end and not the front end.
Yeah. So here's the thing with this game is, it's like a autistic organizing psychopath's dream, you know? Because, it tracks... The graphics are not even graphics at all. They're just like ASCII characters. So like you get like
letters and numbers.
Yeah, you get like a little dot for a dwarf and a little square for a stone or something like that. It's disgusting. So there are all of these
you can get, and I would not be playing it at all if I didn't have a decent
pass. I'll look into that. But it tracks like everything that happens to your colony, and because the front end is so basic, there's a huge range of events that can happen. The goblins were like, when they kill your dwarfs, they will like take the heads and pile them outside like their lair or something like that. And like, it tracks like your dwarf's entire, like, each dwarf, like, history. He's like, he's sad because this dwarf was mean to him, and he's happy because he ate this thing 3.25 hours ago. And so it's got all these like story extractor things to help you along. But there's such a huge ream of information is that the downside is that it tells you everything. It doesn't filter anything for significance, and it doesn't chain things together. So it's sort of part of the way there, but it falls into space in terms of being able to be playable. It's like trying to figure out the history of like the Soviet Union by getting every economic report of every region and every village for its entire 90-year history. By going and reading all those numbers and figuring out the history of...
But the people who play it write these amazing little stories.
And so what they do is...
And they kind of stop talking about them.
Yeah.
it gives this cue. Something really amazing happened.
Yeah.
And
so if you can interpret it, it's incredible. Because there's all these little events and all these little things which matter. And these little things become significant at some point. But the problem is nobody can pick that shit out. It's so varied.
But it sounds like with the stuff you were talking about with Peter opening Universalism, that's a lot easier to pick out.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think is really you've got this kind of spectrum of, one axis is, how much is embedded in it. You know, how much procedural is there to it? Like, say, NetApp. You know, like and most of those roguelikes, you know, there's a ton of stuff buried in there that, you know, anything you, you know, if A, if you have A and you see B, usually A and B will interact and do something interesting for an infinite combination of A's and B's.
I know for some people, NetHack is like the never-ending story. It's like it's really happening to them. they talk about NetHack the same way that people talk about 1240.
Yeah. So that's one axis, is, you know, how much is in the game that's been planted there to be a trigger. And then the other, another axis is, how is that being brought to the player's attention? Yeah. You know, so that's really the two things. Because there seems like there's a lot of games like, you know, not a lot of games like Dwarf Fortress, but, you know, you've got Dwarf Fortress, and in that, there's tons and tons going on. And it's, you know, and that's going to be something where I think the design will evolve, of people saying, okay, do I bring certain things to the surface, or do I just leave it as, you pull what you want out of it? Because as a player, if you start digging into this stuff, you'll find more of it, and you'll find it interesting, and you'll ignore some things, and you go after others. So you can let the player self-select what they want to talk about, or what they want to enjoy.
It's funny, because it seems like to me, like, you know, you could do both, right? You can have some things you pull out, some things you leave at a medium level, and some things you leave buried. And it seems like the problem with something like Dwarf Fortress is sort of like everything is just like way down under.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Well, because there's... How do you choose what goes high and what goes low?
But maybe that's just...
The machine can't pick out what matters to you.
But I guess as a game designer, though, you can sort of privilege certain kinds of things just in the feedback.
You can try, but
there's a... Well, there's one thing you can do is you can hide your numbers if you want. You can push certain things to the fore and pull certain things back. And you can also, like, you know, whether you expose numbers or not is one way. Another way that I think you can do it is to have... it's late in the day, isn't it? but, you know, one of the things I was actually playing this recently was the King of Dragon Pass, which is a shareware game, came out in, like, 1999, and it's a fantasy world where you've got essentially a small Norse tribe that you are running, and they've moved to this far-off pass, and there's a whole bunch of other tribes. Have fun. And it's you leading them through season after season of, you know, we do our planting, we do our raiding, we have rituals to the gods that get us boons. You know, that sort of a progression. They hide almost all their numbers. The only numbers you really get to see are, like, number of cattle, number of sheep, you know, things like that. None of the, I get a bonus for doing this or a negative for doing this. It's all presented in very story option ways. So I think that, you know, like, you can... I'm not sure exactly how you would want to go about using that kind of, like, you know, narrative versus numbers, but it seems like that's a tool to use
as one aspect. Things. But it's very blunt because it covers everything. Like, you can just, you can either hide a certain value or you expose it, right? What I'm talking about is, like, situations where, you look at the real world, there's gigantic amount of information there, but only different parts of it matter at different times. So imagine, like, Dwarf Fortress. I never actually really played it, obviously. But if there was, like...
It's that obtuse. I think it's still
probably seems less so over time. But I'm just giving an example would be, a system that would work would be, if, say there's like a battle and like one of the dwarves is drunk and then increases his strength and reduces his intelligence or whatever, and like that allows him to like kill this golem or something that's attacking. So if you were writing that in the report, it would be like, you know, Glowin the dwarf was hammered, so he like used his super strength to smash the golem. The thing is, in order to extract that information from the game, you have to tell the drunkenness of all the dwarves all the time. What I think would work best would be if the game would be like, that information was there, and you could see it if you really wanted to, but it would like pop up and tell you that this battle was won because this guy was drunk, and that gave him this thing, and it, like this little chain of events of significance that led to the current situation.
More kind of like a... By, like, this stuff is all going around in the background, but when it becomes relevant, it's like, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, this is happening. Or, like, if you're negotiating with guys in Civ 4, it says, like, you know, give us this technology or something. They don't say, like, you know, we're pretty sure the Egyptians are going to attack us, so we need this oil refining technology so we can produce tanks. And if you don't give it to us, we'll probably go down, and then you'll have to deal with them yourself, so you better give it to us. Like, that's not the kind of thing they tell you. Like, that's sort of... And see, that goes in the future because that's like anticipated cause and effect, right? Where characters are like responding to something which they think might happen. There's a whole artificial intelligence problem.
If there's any way to extract that information or even an approximation of it from the existing numbers and existing data extracting, you could make something that would
address that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that hasn't even really been tried that hard, I don't think.
You're talking about just trying to look ahead, like strategically, and then like put that into words.
Well, that's like making the AI readable, so like the AI can explain the decisions to you.
Well, one of the things, actually, I was talking to Andy from CDO about generating stories, and in his case, that means generating random dungeons. And we've been talking, I've been talking with this AI guy about how to classify events as tier 1 events, tier 2 events, tier 3 events, with each story having so many kind of what we call trash mobs, trash events, that are kind of filler but interesting somehow. And then builder events, which raise tension level. And finally, a tier 3 event, which is a climax of some sort. So, because every story, every good story, has an arc, has a, well, we started here and things got more interesting, until we hit a climax, and then the story was over. And what you're saying is there are, well, what I'm hearing is that there are ups and downs to all these stories.
Time.
Okay, and there's no, that structure isn't there in...
I think that there's no connected dots.
Right.
Like, the events are there. I think in a lot of games, the events are there, but there's...
And we impose the order on our minds.
Yes. Oh,
sure, yes. Lots of times.
Because Asad was trying to do that.
Right.
I talked to Michael a lot about reaction.
What you're talking about is the causality, making the causality of events obvious.
Like a chain of
thought.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's at least what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. The problem is the user interaction. There's generating a story for a user to walk through linearly. And then there's making one an environment react to a user interaction that then generates more of the story. So it's generating on the fly versus pre-generating before the user starts, which is a tough problem. I don't know.
I would love to see it.
You're looking at the screen, guys. Let me turn it around.